This week on Vaticano, meet the Vatican Gendarmerie, the guardians of the Pope. Hear from Bishop Rolando Jose Alvarez as he sits down for his first television interview since his release from prison in Nicaragua. And join the Nordic Pilgrimage on their inspiring journey to Rome. Vaticano starts now.
Which actions to take?
World leaders gathered at the Vatican's Apostolic Palace to celebrate the Summit on Children's Rights. Before the opening, Pope Francis received a group of 10 children. Among them was Roman, a Ukrainian child who suffered fourth-degree burns in a rocket attack. The embrace between the little boy and the Pope became the image that reminds us of the importance of this summit.
It was not because she was freed that day. It was
Nobel laureates, professors, economists, religious and political leaders discussed the protection of children suffering from poverty, war, exploitation, and lack of education. Magnus McFarlane Barrow, the founder of Mary's Meals, has reiterated that child hunger is on the rise after decades of progress.
With all our technology, all our possibilities, all our resources, the situation is getting worse.
Yes, in many ways it's getting worse, and you're right, because I think, you know, we have an even greater responsibility for that failing, because we have more possibilities than ever. We have more tools at our disposal than ever to solve these things and to uphold the rights of every child to life and for their growth and to enable them to flourish. We have so many ways we can do that today, and I think it's a very great failing. And that's why I was so pleased that the Holy Father would convene a meeting like that and take the lead on that.
In addition, the pontiff pointed out that abortion is another kind of attack on children that suppresses hope for humanity.
Looking through the eyes of those who have experienced war is the best way to understand the inestimable value of life. But listening to children living in violence, exploitation, or injustice today also serves to strengthen our no to war.
No a la guerra.
During the meeting, the Pope lamented the loss of childhood for children suffering from wars and asked that injustices against the weakest not become the new normal.
In nome di questa logica dello scarto.
In the name of this logic of discarding, in which man becomes omnipotent, unborn life is sacrificed through the murderous practice of abortion. Abortion suppresses the life of children and cuts off the source of hope for the whole of society.
Prior to Laudato Si, among those present were Al Gore, former Vice President of the United States, and Queen Rania of Jordan, who denounced that in the fury of war, there is no way to protect children from humanity's cruelest impulses.
They are robbed of every right to life and security, but also to education, health, privacy, and protection from abuse. In every news report or video flagged sensitive on social media, they are there, bleeding and covering their ears after an airstrike, burned so badly their own parents can't even recognize them, taking in horrors that have been blurred from our screens for our protection.
During the Congress, participants also discussed the drama of child slavery, where children are victims of trafficking and forced marriages. This Congress is a prelude to the second World Children's Day, which the Pope has called for September of 2026.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. In a meeting with the Roman Rota, the Church's highest court for annulments, Pope Francis praised marriage as a gift that cannot simply be dissolved. He emphasized that it does not limit freedom, but is upheld by God's grace. The sacrament of marriage is a promise from God whose fidelity makes human fidelity possible, the Holy Father explained. During his first Vespers for the World Day of Consecrated Life in St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Francis urged consecrated men and women to be bearers of light in today's world by faithfully living the evangelical counsels. Addressing thousands of religious, he explained how poverty, chastity, and obedience can transform society through God's love. Observed annually on February the 2nd, this year's celebration takes on special significance as the Church prepares for the Jubilee of Consecrated Life in October. Pope Francis encouraged Ukrainian youth to remain committed to dialogue and patriotism, acknowledging how hard it is to forgive amid ongoing conflict. He described being patriots as the mysticism of young Ukrainians today. Connecting online with about 250 young people in Kiev and elsewhere in Europe and the Americas, the encounter began with prayer and continued with testimonies about the war's impact on their lives and communities. Pope Francis is going to meet the Roman clergy on Thursday, March the 6th, at the Basilica of St. John the Lateran. The last meeting with diocesan and religious priests serving in pastoral ministry in Rome, as well as permanent deacons, took place on January the 13th, back in 2024. Pope Francis announced he will focus on children in a new papal document, noting, "Children look to us to see how we send life forward." He also spoke about the unborn, warning that in a throwaway mentality where people behave as tough, all-powerful, unborn life is sacrificed through the murderous practice of abortion. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. For EWTN Vaticano, Andreas Thonhauser.
In a few moments, we'll meet the guardians of the Pope. While the Jubilee of the Armed Forces is in full swing, the Vatican Gendarmerie never rests. Known as the Guardian Angels of the Pope, this elite militarized police corps consists of over 150 members, dressed in navy blue. Less ornate than the colorful Swiss Guard, the Gendarmerie stand shoulder to shoulder with the papal soldiers, primarily responsible for Pope Francis's personal security.
Certainly, it is a privilege reserved for a few. Protecting the Pope while we are here in the Vatican is not so difficult. But when we go abroad, in Italy, it becomes a bit more complicated. Not so much because of potential threats, but especially because we need to ensure that this priest, dressed in white, can remain safe while being as close to the people as possible.
Following Pope Francis can sometimes be quite challenging, as he frequently surprises the world by breaking security protocols.
Let's say it's very informal, so we often go off schedule, but they are beautiful adventures that stay in our heart.
The Gendarmerie, with a history spanning over 200 years, handles a multitude of tasks each day. They accompany the Pope during solemn ceremonies and papal audiences, and they escort heads of state, such as the recent visit by the President of Malta to Vatican City. Inside the smallest country in the world and its extraterritorial sites in Rome, everything is meticulously supervised from a special location hidden in the basement of one of the Holy See's palaces. EWTN Vatican correspondent Magdalena Volinska-Riedi received a unique opportunity to enter the operational hub of the Vatican Police Corps, known as the Sala Operativa.
The operations room is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and it has become the point of reference for the various activities that take place in the Vatican, both ordinary and extraordinary.
Every square meter of Vatican territory is meticulously monitored by highly trained officers within this compact yet fully equipped room.
First of all, it must be said that the operator who provides service here in the operations room comes from the Gendarmerie Corps and is selected after having performed their duties in the field for at least 4 years from the time of entry.
Dopo minimo 4 anni di attività.
Few people know that behind its high walls, the gendarmerie serve as both roadside police and maintain public order across the 120 acres of the smallest country in the world. Fabio Gonella, our EWTN cameraman, had the privilege of joining a morning patrol with one of the gendarmerie inspectors. Together, they explored the hidden backstreets of the Vatican, as well as the inaccessible tunnels and courtyards of the Apostolic Palace. In addition to their policing duties, gendarmerie officers act as tax police and prison guards. With its own justice system, Vatican City-State relies on them to prevent and curb crime effectively.
The crimes committed inside are very few. They are more, let's say, transnational offenses than internal Vatican ones. However, our role in short continues. We have also achieved some results.
Their primary daily task is to protect the entrances to the sovereign Vatican City-State territory by checking IDs and license plates. A prime example is the Porta del Perugino, adjacent to the Domus Santa Marta, where Pope Francis resides. Here, meticulous inspection is of utmost importance. When it comes to pastoral visits to Italy and all papal trips around the world, protecting the Pope is both crucial and highly challenging. It requires months of preparation and constant coordination with local security forces and international organizations like Interpol, to which the gendarmerie has been affiliated for years.
The behind-the-scenes journey is an incredible thing. From the outside, you don't see the great work that goes into all the preparatory activities, such as various inspections, agreements, meetings, and conferences. And then, naturally, when we go, we also verify that what we have requested has been done appropriately and meets the needs of the Pope and the person the Pope is meeting.
The gendarmerie is constantly seeking brave young men willing to sacrifice for the Church and the Pope. These individuals, filled with deep faith, draw strength to serve the successor of St. Peter and protect this small yet vital cornerstone on earth and the state in which he resides.
Le notizie che giungono da Nicaragua.
News coming from Nicaragua have saddened me, and I cannot help but be concerned about the Bishop Rolando Alvarez, Bishop of Matagalpa, whom I love so much.
A chi voglio tanto bene.
With these words, Pope Francis wanted to reach La Modelo prison in Nicaragua, where Bishop Rolando Alvarez had been in prison a few days before. 26 years in jail, this was the sentence handed down to the Nicaraguan bishop in February 2023 after he refused to be exiled. Bishop Alvarez, known for his defense of human rights and religious freedom, was accused of treason and of spreading false news to destabilize the government of Daniel Ortega. The Catholic Church in Nicaragua has been a target of many attacks, the expulsion of the Apostolic Nuncio in 2022, the dissolution of the Jesuit order, and the seizure of its assets, the confiscation of the major seminary of Matagalpa to halt priestly formation, and most recently, the confiscation of the Poor Clare sisters' property. In January 2024, 19 members of the Catholic Church of Nicaragua were sent to Rome, among them Monsignor Rolando Alvarez. And now, for the first time since being released, Monsignor Alvarez sits down for a one-on-one interview with EWTN News.
Monsignor Ronaldo Alvarez, you arrived in Rome a year ago. What has your life been like here? What tasks has Pope Francis entrusted to you?
I am very happy in Rome because whenever I was detained, I always thought that at the time of liberation, after Nicaragua, the best city in which I could live is in the Eternal One.
precisamente porque estoy cerca de Pedro y eso renueva.
Precisely because I'm close to Peter, and that renews my faith in such a way that I've had a year of recovery, certainly of my overall health, but in which I have come and am getting the inner peace that I needed so much.
La paz interior que tanto necesitaba. Yo no me siento exiliado, sino.
I do not feel exiled, but liberated. And in the diaspora, faith always grows and hope is strengthened.
On the day you came to Rome, how did you feel? What was that day like for you?
Bueno, primero déjame decirte que cuando salí.
Well, first, let me tell you that when I got out of prison and they were taking me to the airport, in the steps, the Secretary to the State of the Holy See, on behalf of the Holy Father, made to the government, of course I felt a deep joy. But above all, it was an experience of faith, because at that moment I recited the Creed, which is why I suffered that experience, for my faith.
Did you think that this day of liberation would come?
I always thought and believed in my freedom. I always believed in my liberation. When I don't know, I didn't know, but I always hoped to be free. And I insist that what sustained me was prayer. To be able to be giving this interview in this beautiful Pontifical Commission of Latin America can only be explained as a supernatural action of God. There is no human explanation for me to be with you at this moment.
You talked about your state of health on the day you left during the year you were incarcerated. How was your state of health before, and how is it now?
I can say it in a language of quantification, minus zero. Minus zero in all of my psychological, psychiatric, emotional, affective, sentimental, moral, spiritual, physical, somatic capacities. Minus zero. Now, 1 year later, I can say that I'm at 90% recovered.
And lastly, Monsignor, is there any message of thanksgiving you would like to share?
To tell them that I love them. I love my people very much. I love my people and tell them that I am a bishop for the Universal Church, and that is, I was ordained bishop for Matagalpa. I am the visible head of Matagalpa and apostolic administrator of Esteli, and I will continue to be so until God wills it, and I want to send them from here my blessing of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit to all the people of Nicaragua and of Latin America.
Monsignor Naldo Alvarez, thank you very much.
Gracias a ti.
Thank you.
We'll return after a short break as we join the Nordic pilgrimage on their trip to Rome. The Nordic countries, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Iceland are among the least religious nations in the world. While the northern European nations have deep Catholic roots, Catholicism is a small minority in each country today, with migrants making up most of the church. For the first time ever, these five small Catholic communities have organized a joint pilgrimage to Rome on the occasion of the 2025 Jubilee.
So the church in the Nordic countries is small. We're between 1-3% of the population, very much a migrant church. We speak of ourselves as being the universal church in the small, in the little, because every parish has many nationalities, many cultures, many languages. But we are this minority, and for a minority to be able to be together and to be together within the context of the Universal Church matters a great deal. So to be here in Rome is always a great experience for us, strengthening us in our faith and uniting us with the Universal Church and the Holy Father.
Over the span of 3 days, over 1,000 Nordic pilgrims visited Rome's holy sites and shared moments of prayer and reflection. While each country had its own national and diocesan events, the whole group also came together to celebrate Mass in the papal basilicas and walk through the holy doors as one.
This experience has been, it's very hard to explain, but it's something that I will carry with me in my heart, spiritually, and hopefully one day be able to tell my grandchildren about. It's really a beautiful experience to see so many people from Scandinavia come together, to pray together.
It's amazing to be here and know that this is the place where the first Christians fought for their faith and to feel inspired to also fight for your faith. That has meant a lot to me.
The pilgrimage culminated in a private audience with the Pope and a solemn Mass at the altar of the chair in St. Peter's Basilica. For those from small parishes scattered across the north, this gathering has been a deeply meaningful experience, offering connection, encouragement, and a renewed sense of belonging. Many of them have realized that despite the distance that separates them, they are far from alone.
To see all the unity of the northern countries, Scandinavia, is very good, you know, because we are very isolated in Iceland. We are few Catholics, you know, and to meet other Catholics in the northern countries it gives us hope.
Even with the small numbers of Catholics in each country and their diverse backgrounds, this pilgrimage has undoubtedly been a powerful testament to the unity and oneness of the Church.
Our Bishops' Conference is a Nordic conference, so we're quite remarkable in the Church in being a multinational conference, comprising Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland. And we would like to manifest the oneness of our local church in an extended sense, and it's great that the faithful wanted to participate.
Amid the many challenges posed by growing secularization, the church in the Nordic countries is also a witness to the hope that defines the Holy Year. Because of this, as the Nordic bishops emphasized in their homilies throughout the weekend, Nordic Catholics are called to share the truth of Christ with all those searching for meaning and struggling with hopelessness.
Let us pray for one another, that through this pilgrimage during the Jubilee year, we may be strengthened in faith, hope, and love for Jesus Christ, so that we may bear credible witness to Him and His Church when we return home.
Evangelization is undeniably a big part of the mission of the Church in the Nordic countries. Through this pilgrimage, the Nordic pilgrims have once again been reminded of their role in bringing Christ's light to those in need of hope and purpose.
It's been wonderful to be part of this pilgrimage, to deepen our faith, to understand more about what our faith actually means, that God became man for our sake, and not least, remember our call and task to keep walking when we return home.
Especially now when we live in difficult times, we must remember that we carry this hope of our salvation, the salvation of the world. And just like Bishop Eric said in his homily, to remember that God saved this world, and that we are called to continue and be a part of his work of salvation, and to cooperate with God's grace and spread this hope, even if things seem impossible, because nothing is impossible for Christ.
Men ingenting är omöjligt för Kristus.
Now we're in Rome, bright sunny day in winter. You know, in Finland it's very dark and cold. Hope is this warm, is the love of God. And I hope that we, Finns here in Rome, in 2 days we will come back to our beloved Finland to bring this love and hope from the heart of the Church to Finland and through Finland to many, many countries, because the Church is one.
Jag vill spela och singa för er Gud. Jag vill spela och singa för er Gud. Jag vill tacka honom, lova hans namn. Jag vill spela och singa för er Gud.